Hello and welcome to our special podcast on the U.S. election, Race for the White House. I have with me a special guest today, somebody who is a Democratic nominee from Texas, Sri Preston Kulkarni. Many thanks, Mr. Kulkarni, for speaking with us.
No, thank you for having me on. It's my pleasure to be here.
So how is the race heating up in Texas?
So Texas is now the hottest state in the United States in the entire election. According to 538, one of the top pollsters, Texas is the most competitive state in the entire United States. NBC just moved Texas over to toss-up status. So we are the largest battleground in the country officially. And our race, Texas 22, is considered the third most likely to flip in the entire country, partly because we have the largest population in the United States of America. We're growing faster than any other district in the country. We're in the suburbs of Houston where that diversity, especially the Indian American community, is changing the character of our community, and it's also changing our ability to get representation here.
But do you believe that the Indian Americans hold any sway in the election? Can they change things? Can they change outcomes?
Absolutely they can. So overall, we're only about 1% of the American population. However, we have outsized impact in some of these places like Texas, where we are the fastest growing population. In fact, the Indian American population is double the entire margin between Democrats and Republicans in 2018 in the entire state of Texas. In our district in particular, we have an outsized impact. About 20% of our population is Asian American. It's the largest in the entire southern United States. And so when we first started, I was a foreign service officer. I had served overseas in places like Iraq and Israel and Russia, and I resigned to come back home and run for Congress. And I was told, don't bother with the Indian community because they don't vote. And the easiest way to lose an election is to talk to people who don't vote. And when I looked at the numbers, I said, you lost by 35 points before. The easiest way to never get change is to keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. So we started reaching out to each one of the communities, and we recruited volunteers, Gujarati-speaking, Telugu-speaking, Kannada, Malayalam, Hindi, Urdu, Bengali, Punjabi. We are now campaigning in 27 different languages, which has never been done in Texas or American history. The result of that was that in 2018, we got 30,000 new people to show up and vote who had not even voted for president of the United States 2 years earlier. And one of the least competitive districts in America, it wasn't even in the top 100 races, we almost won it. We came within 4.9%. And then after that, we continued to register voters. We registered 69,000 new voters, which is one-third of the entire margin across the state of Texas. And our incumbent, who had previously called me, our congressman called me an Indo-American carpetbagger who gets his money from overseas, he was forced to drop out of the race, leaving this as an open seat with a vacancy. And now we are up by 5 points in a district that had gone 35 points Republican just 6 years ago. We are ranked as the number three most likely to flip red to blue in the entire country. And a large part of that has been because of the Indian community, because we have doubled our turnout. We have come out in huge numbers that we've never, ever seen before. In fact, just this week, we broke the all-time record for Asian American turnout here. We broke the all-time record for youth turnout, and we broke the all-time record for new voter turnout here in District 22. In fact, we're at 110% of the turnout, the total turnout for 2016, and we still have 5 more days to vote.
Well, that's quite interesting, but help us understand, have there been any challenges that you've faced while trying to reach out to the Indian American community?
Absolutely. So part of the issue is that the Indian American community isn't just one community. As we mentioned, we speak so many different languages. We come from so many different religious backgrounds. And in our race, our opponent has actually tried to use that against us. He's tried to inflame tension between the religious communities, for example, trying to use those points of tension to break up our coalition. So this is a challenge, but we have continued to run on a platform of inclusion and unity. So we've had the most Hindu volunteers ever in Texas history, as well as the most Muslim volunteers ever in Texas history, and the most Sikh, and the most Parsi, and the most Jain volunteers. It's truly the most inclusive campaign that we've ever seen here in Texas, and I think that's part of why we're able to be so successful. But, I mean, the second thing is the things that unite us really are belief in science. So healthcare being the number one issue right now facing the coronavirus. Our opponent has said that mask requirements are communist and un-American, whereas we believe that wearing masks is the most American thing we could do because it means we care about our fellow citizens, we care about our community, we care about our family members. My mother is 68 years old. She lives with me right now, and she's afraid of getting coronavirus. We want to get personal protective equipment out to all of our healthcare workers, our teachers, for example, who need them to reopen schools properly. And we want to have rapid testing available so that we can actually get those results in a few hours or one day, not 7 to 10 days, because that's what we need to reopen our economy. And so many of us are small business owners here, so we need to make sure that we provide targeted relief to those industries, like hotel and motel owners, which are dominated by the Indian community, like restaurants, for example, like our sole proprietors who need targeted relief. They need loan forgiveness. If you own a small shop, you don't want to go through all the red tape. It's too expensive and too difficult to get that loan forgiveness. And then lastly, once we get the coronavirus under control, we need to make sure that we provide startup tax credits so that those small businesses, those entrepreneurs who came here, can make a better life for themselves and their families, like my family did, that they're able to get back to normal, which is what we want to do. We want to open our businesses. We want to have our schools open. We want our children to be able to get a proper education. And that only comes with a belief in science first, before political extremism.
It's interesting that you mentioned your mother. So that's giving me an inroads now into talking a bit about your personal life as well. How was it growing up with an Indian father in the United States?
So my father came here in 1969. He was originally from Hyderabad, and he came on a Rotary scholarship. As part of that scholarship, he had to give speeches across the South, and at one of the Rotary clubs, he was in the restroom in 1969, and someone went in and pushed him against the wall and told him he was in the wrong restroom. And then someone else came in and explained, "This is our guest speaker today," and he had to straighten his shirt, and then my father had to address this audience after having been assaulted in the bathroom. And what my father told me growing up was, we are just as American as anyone else, no matter our name, no matter our religion, and no matter what we look like, and no one can tell us difference. Even growing up, sometimes in school, teachers would single me out. I had a teacher who said that we couldn't go to the Black History program, because every year in February we studied Black History. And when I asked why not, she said, "Because we're not Black. All of us here are European descent, except for you, Sri. What race exactly are you?" And it was the first time that a teacher had pointed to me in front of all the other students and singled me out. And I told her, I said, "I consider myself part of the human race." And I think that's the right answer. And it's not just the right answer for students. It's the right answer for America, because the greatness of America is not despite our diversity. It's that we have had these waves of immigrants who have come here. And it's not just Indian or Asian immigrants. In the 1800s, it was immigrants from Ireland or Germany. And anyone who says that immigration is a threat to the United States, they don't know the history of the United States. Immigration is what makes us diverse. It's what makes us innovative. I think immigration is actually what makes us great as a country.
So how different is a household where parents come from two different cultures? Does it provide a wider canvas for the child to play with?
Oh, absolutely. So I think you're referring to the fact that my father was an immigrant from India. My mother, her family goes back to General Sam Houston, the first president of the Republic of Texas, after whom the city of Houston was named. And I say, actually, the first immigrant in my family to come to Texas wasn't my father in 1969. It was my great-uncle Sam Houston in 1832, because at that time, this was Mexico, and he was the immigrant here. But that combination of those two cultures, I think that represents what's going on in America today, because we do have great traditions, especially traditions of democracy, which is something that we hold in common with India. And we need to be respectful. We need to be proud of our traditions. But having immigrants arrive in the United States, that is not a conflict with America. In fact, that is what enriches America. The fact that parts of Indian culture are now part of American culture, the fact that yoga is everywhere in the United States, the fact that we eat our barbecue here in Texas, we love it, we love our cowboy boots, but we also love our curry here in Texas. that's because this is part of American culture now, and I don't think that we should have to choose between being Indian and being American, because we are both.
Sure. But, you know, over the past few years, a perception has been created, which is anti-immigrant in nature, which you've pointed out as well. How will the Democrats change that perception? Because, an economic downturn because of a pandemic could only make this perception more strong that people from outside are robbing the legitimate jobs of those who are Americans.
So you're absolutely correct that this perception is there, and I think it's being whipped up by certain politicians who like to blame problems on people of different ethnic communities. So, for example, right now in Dallas, people have gotten letters to the Indian community threatening them, telling them to go back to their country. We have politicians in America saying very similar things. Go back to where you're from, even to people who were born here in the United States. Once again, the engine of our economy is actually our diversity. Almost half of the Fortune 500 companies were started by either immigrants or children of immigrants. But in order to get past this, we have to change our political landscape. The reason that it's been easy to demonize immigrants of all sorts throughout our history is because you paid no political penalty if they didn't vote. And in fact, Indian Americans could not, the Indians could not become Americans. It was illegal to become a U.S. citizen until the 1940s, actually. And it was only in the 1960s after the Immigration Naturalization Act, which we were allowed that right to become U.S. citizens. We haven't taken that right, the right of voting and participating in democracy as seriously in the United States as probably we should have. Because we've contributed to the intellectual capital of this country, we've contributed to the financial capital, but if you don't have representation, then you can always demonize people, you can attack people, things like threatening the H-1B program this year or threatening all foreign students of being kicked out of the country, which happened earlier this year. That would be like shooting ourselves in the foot economically, but it's an easy thing to do if you pay no political penalty. So the response to that is to make sure that we participate in higher numbers than ever before. So we have broken the record actually here in Texas 22 for participation for voting among the Indian American community. So first we have to have participation, but then we also have to have representation. We have never had an Indian American elected to U.S. Congress in the history of Texas. I will be the first one, and I will be proud to be so.
Mr. Kulkarni, help us understand that do nominations like yours and the fact that Kamala Harris is running for VP, have they actually galvanized votes on the ground?
Absolutely, absolutely. So, as I mentioned, we doubled our participation by the Indian American and the Asian American community at large in the last election, and then we've broken that record again this time, and especially among young people. So I was that student growing up here who did not see any faces like mine, who did not see a city council person or a mayor or a congressperson or a governor who looked like me. And now that I have been nominated, now that I'm up in the polls by 5 points and we are the favorite to become the first Indian American congressman, it has inspired so many young people who volunteer. They want to participate in our campaign. They are inspired. And the fact that we could have an Indian American vice president now, it's inspired families across Texas and across the country through all of our uncles and especially our aunties, because our campaign has been powered by aunties. They're the ones who are making the phone calls in Telugu and Marathi and in Kannada and Hindi. Mm-hmm. We're connecting all of these communities. Mm-hmm. It's let them know that their children, their sons, and especially their daughters can grow up to be anything they want to be in the United States, whether it's a U.S. congressperson or even vice president of the United States of America.
Many thanks, Sri Preston Kulkarni, for speaking with us, and all the best.
All right. Thank you.